Middle East and Africa.
The Hamas-Israel conflict. Anger, tears, and recriminations. On Independence Day, Israel is ripping itself apart.
The torch lighting, which traditionally opens Israel Independence Day, was broadcast on the evening of May 13th as usual. But instead of being televised live as before, the event was pre-recorded. The government said this was because of the solemnity of holding the ceremony while the nation is at war. The real reason, however, was the politicians' fear that it would be disrupted by protesters, furious with their failings in handling the war. In a breach of protocol, some broadcasters screened an alternative ceremony organised by the families of hostages held in Gaza, protesting against the government. As Israel celebrated the 75th anniversary of its independence a year ago, it seemed to many, including this newspaper, that the most immediate threats to its prosperity, stability and security came from within. A new government, in which far-right and religious nationalist parties held sway, had launched a radical constitutional overhaul aimed at dramatically weakening the independent Supreme Court. The proposed reforms brought hundreds of thousands of Israelis out on the streets in bitter protests against what they saw as the dangerous erosion of their country's democratic foundations. It was a clash between two Israels, a secular and, at least in its own eyes, liberal state still aligned with the ethos of Israel's socialist Zionist founders, and the new Israel of the ruling right-wing Likud party and its ultra-Orthodox partners. Those two visions of the country's identity looked increasingly incompatible. Constitutional crisis loomed, and Isaac Herzog, Israel's president, warned of civil war. Meanwhile, long-standing external threats, the current conflict with the stateless Palestinians and an increasingly aggressive Iran, seemed manageable. The salience of Israel's festering occupation of the Palestinians in the West Bank and the blockade of Gaza had faded regionally and internationally. Israel had formalized diplomatic relations with five Arab countries, and a breakthrough with Saudi Arabia seemed to be around the corner. Joining together to confront the influence of Iran, a shared rival, took precedence over resolving the plight of the Palestinians. Fast forward 12 months to the 76th anniversary, and the dangers beyond Israel's borders loom large. Israel is stuck in a disastrous war in Gaza, triggered by the atrocities inflicted by Hamas, the Palestinian Islamist movement, last October. The conflict has killed around 35,000 Palestinians, including Hamas fighters. That has triggered a wave of legitimate protest against Israel, legal action accusing it of breaking international law, and a global upsurge in anti-Semitism. President Joe Biden has begun to restrict the supply of arms to Israel in order to dissuade it from a full-scale invasion of Rafah, Hamas's last stronghold, and to curb critics at home. Beyond Gaza, the picture is grim. Hezbollah, the Iran-backed Lebanese militia, has launched its own war of attrition. The wider region has become more threatening. The Houthis in Yemen are targeting shipping in the Red Sea as part of what they claim is a siege of Israel. On April 13th, Iran launched a direct strike on Israeli soil in retaliation for the bombing of its diplomatic compound in Damascus. A coalition of Western and Arab armed forces helped Israel fend off Iran's attack, averting open war for now. But as the death toll mounts in Gaza, ties with Israel's Arab neighbours are fraying. The relationship with Egypt, which also borders Gaza and worries about the conflict spilling over, looks particularly fragile. Saudi Arabia's crown prince and de facto ruler, Mohammed bin Salman, is apparently still open to normalisation with Israel, but wants to see a ceasefire in Gaza and a revival of the peace process with the Palestinians first. Initially, Israel responded to the Hamas attacks with a display of unity. The trauma of the massacre of nearly 1,200 people and the kidnapping of over 250 into Gaza blotted out the divisions. some 300,000 reservist soldiers, including many who before the war had been threatening to suspend their service in protest at the proposed constitutional changes, rushed to their units. Israelis seemed to set aside their differences. Secular and religious volunteers came together to help families who had been displaced by the fighting. Support for the war and for Israel's armed forces was strong. But as the conflict has continued, the splits within the country have resurfaced. Support for the invasion of Gaza has not translated into support for the government. The disputes over the judicial system have been replaced by anger at the politicians who have catastrophically mishandled the war. Among the sites Hamas attacked were kibbutzim and a music festival, both bastions of the secular, liberal Israel, so at odds with the government of Benjamin Netanyahu. Kibbutz survivors have refused to meet the Prime Minister, who has infuriated many Israelis by failing to take responsibility for the intelligence and defence failures that preceded October 7th. Resentments have deepened as Israelis have argued over whether they shouldered an equal burden in the war. The fighting has sharpened secular Israelis' anger at the ultra-Orthodox, who make up 13% of Israelis and whose young men have long been exempted from military service. The exemption has been ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, to the anger of the ultra-Orthodox parties that are a key element in Mr. Netanyahu's coalition. On Memorial Day, which falls the day before Israelis celebrate their independence, the country remembers fallen soldiers and victims of terror attacks. This year, ministers were heckled at services of remembrance. Relatives of soldiers killed in Gaza walked out of Mr. Netanyahu's speech at the National Cemetery. In his address, Mr. Herzog implored Israelis to heal their rifts. A year ago, the president tried to use his position above politics to find a compromise over constitutional reform. He failed to reconcile Israel's warring tribes then and seems likely to fail now. The divisions between Israelis have shaped the course of the war. Mr. Netanyahu has refused to formulate a strategy to end the conflict beyond the vague goals of destroying Hamas and total victory because he remains so dependent on his far-right partners. They make no attempt to hide their desire to reoccupy Gaza permanently and rebuild the Jewish settlements that Israel dismantled there in 2005. A huge majority of Israelis supported the war in its early months. That is changing. According to one recent survey, 62% of the country now think a temporary ceasefire agreement to free the surviving hostages in Gaza should take priority over another military push into Rafah. But Mr. Netanyahu is reluctant. The hardliners in his cabinet are threatening to bring down the government if he pauses the war. Those who protested against Mr. Netanyahu's judicial reforms are back on the streets, but they have struggled to find a unified message. Some call for the release of the hostages, whatever the price. Others are demanding an end to the war. Many are simply clamouring for Mr. Netanyahu to go. Meanwhile, the government's supporters have organised their own pressure groups of families of hostages and fallen soldiers who demand that Israel continue to pummel Gaza. The Biden administration and its partners in the Middle East have offered Israel a way out of the war with the vision of a revitalized Palestinian Authority replacing Hamas in Gaza and the building of an America-backed regional alliance against Iran and its proxies. Achieving this would be far from simple, but would be preferable to what looks like an unwinnable war. And yet the splits within Israel are making it nearly impossible for the country to follow that path. It is blocked by the combination of a deeply traumatized and divided population, an electoral system that gives disproportionate power to small radical parties, and an unpopular leader fighting for his political survival above all else. A year ago, those on the right, including Mr. Netanyahu, thought Israel could survive its domestic turmoil in part because it no longer faced the external threats of the past. Today, it is clear that even at the height of war, the greatest threats to Israel remain those within its own borders.